D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 390, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hausch. Today, I'm joined by Corey Fruitman from InstantHouseCall.com. Hey, welcome to the show, Corey.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's great to have you back on. I know we had you on Podnuts a few weeks ago. I can't even remember, time flies. But one of the reasons that I asked Corey to come on the show today is we were talking after our last episode of Podnuts, and we were talking about the subject of Windows 8. And he said, hey, if you ever want to do a podcast about Windows 8, and you know, let's do that. And I kind of snickered and joked a little bit. Yeah, okay, whatever. No, you know, nobody wants to learn Windows 8. Nobody wants to figure that stuff out. And it's such a pain. And, you know, I've got my Start 8 bar or my Classic Start or whatever, and I'm very, very happy with that. And I like doing it the old-fashioned way. And he took about an hour of his own time and basically logged into my computer and showed me around Windows 8. After he showed me just a handful of things to give me a better understanding of it, I got rid of Start 8. I got rid of all my extra, you know, little cheat tools, is what I'll call them. And I started using Windows 8 like Windows 8 was supposed to be used. And I found it was a lot more efficient than the way I was doing things. Because part of the problem from my standpoint was I would go to the Start bar, I would open it up, and out of the 100 programs that I had loaded in there, I had to find what I was looking for. Now, everybody's going to say, okay, well, you know, hey, we use a taskbar or whatever, and we put our shortcuts on our desktop, which irritates me. I hate when customers do that, but that's a personal issue. So with all that being said, we're just going to talk about the benefits of Windows 8 and how Windows 8 is technicians, how can we can help educate people to bring them up to the level of being able to use this operating system. Because as Corey will tell you here in a few minutes, it's not going away. And we're moving in a different direction, and we kind of have to embrace that. And I can feel the pushback already, but I think it's going to be an overall good educational show just to bring you guys good information about what Corey has learned about making a Windows 8 or 8.1 product in Instant House Call, which he's done a Metro app, not a Metro app, but whatever they're calling the app nowadays. And in doing that, he's had to learn how to use Windows 8.1 properly. And so we're going to go ahead and go into that. And Corey, you got anything you want to open up with as far as, you know, what you feel about Windows 8?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously no secret that I am one of the very few Windows 8 fans out there. Looks like I got a couple converts, which is fantastic. But I'm not here to change anyone's mind on Windows 8. I know there are a lot of people who have very strong reactions to it. But I think there are some benefits that especially technicians may not have noticed because they're used to old habits. And when you open it up and you look at what's going on and what they're trying to do, it actually helps you. It provides you with a lot of opportunities to sell more to your customers, to protect your customers' machines, and really give a better experience to your customers overall.
Absolutely. You know, I think you're exactly right. And I've had since you've showed me how to use Windows 8, properly and I've done some of my own tweaks and basically came to an understanding of how it works and how it works more efficiently as far as, you know, if you look at the Start bar hitting the Windows key on your keyboard, you know, that brings up this huge Start menu. But I was able to tailor mine to get to things that I needed to quickly. And the reality is, not only is it bigger, because, you know, as we get older, you know, as things are smaller, it's harder to find things to click on. Or I don't know how many people have done this, but I'm sitting there clicking on a menu and I click the wrong thing because I'm just a hair off. You know, we're dealing in today's resolution. You're looking at, my desktop resolution is 2560 by 1600. And so that makes everything very small. Gives me more screen real estate, which is great. But I like the eye candy of being able to click on a huge icon to get my program running. And it's usually a button press on the keyboard and a click with my mouse. So that's one of the things that I like about, you know, how Windows 8 has changed the way that I do things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that you touched on in the intro, which is a lot of people put a bunch of icons on their desktop. And I know I do it too. So the stuff that I really like to use, that I use a lot, I'll put it on my desktop, double click on it, and it's easy to get to. That's what the start screen really is. It's just a giant desktop with a bunch of icons that you frequently use. And then there's a little arrow if you want to get to your all apps or what you would normally do, use your start menu for. And right. I have no inside information on this, but I think what happened is Microsoft was looking, how do people actually use our product? And they tried to tailor it to the way people actually use their product. And we've seen what the reaction is to that. But I think if you can sort of get over, if you can get over those habits and see it for what it is, and that's really like we haven't even scratched the surface. I'm sure we will throughout the show, but that's really what a lot of Windows 8 is saying, okay, this is actually how you use our operating system. Here you go. Now you can use it that way.
That's a great point because you put it so eloquently because the way I never thought about it like that, but I've always been a person that. You know, I'm sorry, this is vain or whatever, or just my weirdness, but I looked at my computer screen is, you know, I've got a screenshot up there from the new Call of Duty game coming out. And so I look at my screen as a beautiful picture or representation. I don't want a bunch of crap all over, you know, lining this thing up. And then the other thing I noticed is with a lot of people, customers' computers, you have so many icons and then shortcuts to icons and, you know, programs and different things that it becomes so convoluted. And as a technician, I sit there and try to clean that stuff up, even though I don't know why I waste the time because it's just going to get back to that way. So Windows 8 is giving you an opportunity to have that desktop, but it's hidden and it's just a keystroke away. That's what I really like about it.
Yeah, for sure. And something that I really like about it, because I'm on the development side, they don't let us do a lot of things that we were able to do in Windows 7 or XP or whatever. So a really good example is, I'm sure you've experienced this before, where you click start. Say you're looking for Photoshop. You would go start programs, Adobe graphics, Photoshop. It's a reasonably random hierarchy because the developer can dictate where in that hierarchy it goes. With Windows 8, you can't do that. So it keeps developers on their best behavior. So they don't do things that are counterintuitive. They don't put things in a weird hierarchy. They don't put them in a weird place. They don't try to get their branding in silly places. They have one place and one place only that they can put their app. And the same goes for the file directories. And we can get into all this stuff a little bit later. But there's a lot of stuff in there that keeps developers on their best behavior. And it prevents them from doing things like messing up your computer, just making it sloppy like the start menu, or using too many resources. All of those things really make for a better experience once you get used to it.
Right. And to be honest with you, it really didn't take me that long to get used to it. Once you see, you kind of challenged me and you showed me around and I said, all right, you know what? I tried this once before, but I'm going to do it again. I'm going to uninstall my cheating programs. Yes, I said cheating programs. You guys can look at them any way you want. And you know, for my aspect too, I've just had two customers I've moved over to, or three customers here in the last couple months. I've moved over to a Windows 8 machine. And with less than 5 minutes of training, none of those customers have had a problem. They've been able to check their email. They've been able to get on the internet. They've been able to go to eBay or whatever they do on a regular daily basis. I didn't sit there. And most of these people came from, a couple of them came from a Windows XP machine right straight to Windows 8. No Vista, no 7. And they didn't have a problem. And it was just, I just took the time to, after you explained some things to me, I took the time to show them just the things that they would use. And I did show them the apps and how you could use them. And I'll be honest with you, I don't really use a lot of the apps. I haven't gotten to that portion yet. I still use Windows 8 is mostly a desktop computer. But the way the file structure, like you've said, is set up, to me, it is so much more intuitive and so much quicker to get to where I need to go quick. And I never understood the power of Windows 8 when you're in the start menu and you just start typing something. Because before I actually learned that, I looked like a complete and utter buffoon in front of my customers because I had no idea where's the control panel at? You know, how do I get there? And it's like, oh, C-O-N. Oh, there it is. Click on it. Boom, I'm in the control panel. I mean, how much easier can you get? You know, where do you see? Now, don't get me wrong. In my Windows 8 machine on my computer, I have made a shortcut in my start menu to the control panel because it's somewhere that I go frequently, or to my C drive, or to my media drive, or wherever. You can set it up however you want to make it efficient for how you work and how your workflow goes. And that's what's beautiful about it. But it's just in a better intuitive way, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure you get lots of arguments from other folks listening to this, but you're not going to get an argument from me. Why don't we go through some of the tips that we went through when we spoke? Okay. I think a lot of folks don't. This might be a little bit tough to do audio only, but I guess we'll have to paint a picture with words.
I think if nothing else, at least it gives people something to think about, and you know, hopefully we're saying enough here that you guys are able to have a good understanding of what we're talking about, or you'll at least go try it. So because, like I said earlier, Windows 8 is not going away, and even when Threshold comes out, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, which is the next operating system, you're going to start seeing a lot of these other machines start to fall off. You know, I'm not seeing a whole lot of Vista machines anymore. And last year I was seeing mostly Vista machines in some 7. And so we're going to get to that point where you're going to start seeing a lot of Windows 8 machines. And there's still some things that I need to learn about it in order to properly repair these things. So go ahead.
Yeah, so why don't we go over the biggest gripes that people have about Windows 8? And I think those tend to be it doesn't have a start menu. That's the one that I hear the most.
Right.
They miss their start menu.
I don't know why.
But you did.
Yeah, exactly. I thought I did until I was corrected, and now I do not miss the start menu, not one bit.
So the start menu is a big one. Closing apps, especially until that 8.1 update with the new X in the top right corner. But I'm going to show you how it was originally meant to be used. And then I think some of the things that Windows 8 improves on in Windows 7, things that were problems that we just got used to living with, and maybe cover the benefits of modern apps and the difference.
Okay.
Between a modern app and thing. So I don't have that written down, but hopefully the two of us remember that. But why don't we start with the start menu?
Okay.
So when people, we already touched on this a little bit. When people think of the start menu, it's home. That's something you know inside and out. You're very used to going down to that bottom left-hand corner or wherever you keep the start menu and clicking on it to find your apps. But if you look at how you actually use the start menu, I don't know about you, but I would normally go to the start menu and start typing something in the little run bar and let Windows find it for me and then press enter because I don't want to go through that whole hierarchy.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's exactly how the Windows 8 start screen works. That's exactly you tap on the Windows key. The Windows key in general has way more power than it did in previous versions.
Right.
But you tap on the Windows key, and as you said, you start typing control panel, and it'll just appear.
Yes.
So once you get used to that, and it really takes 5 seconds to get used to it.
It really does.
It really does speed things up. So you can start in one app, and you want to bring another app next to it. You tap start key, and you start typing, and there it is. Now I was I just got back from a conference, and I was talking to Carrie Holzman, who said, well, why do I want to type? That's how DOS works. And if you really prefer to use a mouse, as we said before, you can put your favorite tiles on the main screen, and anything you don't use often, you can tuck away in that little drawer underneath where all your apps are.
Right. It's funny because when Kerry was on a show a few shows back, him and I probably sat on Skype at about 4 hours after the podcast, and we got to talking about Windows 8. He's very adamant about doing things with the mouse, and I think there's a fine line. I think as a technician, one of the things that I missed out on that I wish I would have gotten better at, keyboard shortcuts, especially when you're editing and doing all these different types of things on your computer. They make life so much easier than clicking. It takes so long to click everything. And so I really wish that I would have learned my keyboard shortcuts, and I'm still trying to learn that for certain programs, what the keyboard shortcuts are. Because to me, they're still more efficient. And you'll ask anybody that's, in the publishing industry or journalists and stuff like that, they use their keyboard shortcuts all the time. And it's very important. If they didn't have their keyboard shortcuts, they'll all tell you they would be very inefficient using a mouse to do everything. And I think that's the key. I think there's a balance between the both. I still like the mouse too, but I like being able to hit a Windows key with my left hand and go over and touch the icon within a few seconds and click on it, and boom, my app is opened or my program is opened.
Yeah, for sure. And I love shortcuts too. So on my computer, if I press Control C, the calculator comes up. Control Alt N, the notepad comes up. I love shortcuts. And I use all the Windows shortcuts. Now that's something that I think has frustrated a lot of folks with Windows 8. A lot of the shortcuts have changed.
Okay.
A lot of them have changed. And there's new ones that make more sense for Windows 8. Things like Win C to bring up the Charms bar, and a lot of people don't even know what the Charms bar is, right. So it's confusing. And then the mouse gesture to get there, there's a little bit of a delay. There's no doubt that there are irritants, and I'm sure that those will get addressed in Windows 9. I'm not here to tell you that Windows 8 is perfect. I, as we were saying before the show, I've had my own frustrations with Windows 8. But I think the key message is that if you look at the direction that they're taking and what they're really trying to make, as far as I can tell, a whole new operating system. And they're trying to slowly bring you over to fix all of the problems that existed in Windows 7 that we've just gotten used to living with.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I did notice, because you were saying that you would go down to the start bar in Windows 7 and you would open it up and you would start typing. I never did that. I was always an icon pusher. It sounds like that sounds bad. But anyways, I would always find the icon and go through the hierarchy and go down through there. But what I've noticed is a technician, even in Windows 7 machine, I do a lot of typing in that menu to find certain things that are not readily available because everybody's computer set up a little bit differently. And I've noticed that sometimes the things you find in Windows 7, I can't tell you how many times I've clicked on something wrong because it was close. Like, oh, I wanted the word. Where do I need to purge, Windows Restore? And I'll type in System Restore, or Windows Restore, or whatever. And it comes up and it takes me to, hey, do you want to go to this restore point? And I'm like, no, that's not what I was looking for. What I've noticed in Windows 8 is when I go to type things in Windows 8, it's very, very much more intuitive. You still get a lot of different things, but it's a lot closer to what you're actually looking for. Anytime I start to type for some sort of menu, it's in there within, seven icons or so. And that's one of the things that I think is beneficial to me. Just using it that way, it seems like it works better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that is very clear. Like, not the UI is not just flat; the whole operating system is flat. They're trying to get rid of all that hierarchical stuff where you're digging through the control panel to figure out where you create a restore point because you can't remember which icon in the control panel to do it. And now you just click, you start searching for it, and it'll pop it up for you.
Exactly. That's a great tip there. So, okay. So along those lines, we were talking about the, where were we at?
I think we covered the start menu, which is something that is a huge irritant for people, not having the start menu. All I can say is, and I speak from experience on this, if you just use Windows 8 the way it's meant to be used for a day, you'll get used to it. And your customers will get used to it. And they'll find it easier. You know, the other thing to remember is that there's two purposes of the start screen. There's the top part, which is your frequently used icons, and the bottom part where you have to like slide up by clicking that little down arrow,
right.
Which is your all apps. And you want to keep the stuff, and you want to teach your customers to keep the stuff that they frequently use on the top part. And then anything they don't frequently use, you right click it and you unpin it from start, which moves it down to the bottom.
Right. It, you know, and there are certain, you know, when we're talking about this, there are certain benefits to it's not like I don't use my taskbar anymore, because there are some benefits in I might not know of a way, and maybe Corey will enlighten me. But it, for instance, when you're using Office apps or Adobe apps, one of the things I like on the taskbar is, and this was back in Windows 7 and everything too, when you right click on the icon on a taskbar on your desktop, all the things that I've pinned to, you know, different templates and stuff that I use all the time, those come up in a menu. Now, I have not figured out how to do that on the Windows 8 start bar. I'm not even sure it's possible. So I do still have some icons on my desktop, you know, taskbar. You know what I'm talking about, Corey?
I would have to see it to get a better idea.
Okay. And, you know, and one of the other things that I will tell you that I kind of learned on my own from you know, just playing around with it. In Windows 7, they brought up that little folder in the taskbar. And that folder would normally take you to the basically the Windows hierarchy, you know, user documents, pictures, all that kind of stuff in there. You could get to the C drive from there. You could get to your network icons and different things like that. Well, Windows 8 has actually improved that. I can left click on that. And when I open that file folder up, it opens up. It's got all my devices and drives right there. And it's got my desktop, documents, downloads, music, pictures, you know, videos. Everything's right there. It's not like that in Windows 7. And, you know, they don't call it my computer anymore. Or computer, it's called this PC. You know, so right. They have changed some of the names on things. But I think even from a standpoint, and I don't know if this came in Windows 8.1 or if this was a part of the original Windows 8.
I don't remember, to be honest. Okay. The instant developer preview for 8.1 came out, we were on top of it.
Okay.
I've been using 8.1. I mean, we used Windows 8 developer preview when it was getting started, but I would have to go back and check an old VM and see what was going on there.
It was just one of the things that I noticed that, you know, so even when you're on the desktop, there are certain things you can do that I believe in Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 really does a better job than Windows 7 previously did.
Yeah, no, without question. And I think that's something to keep sight of, is that a lot of these things that seem like nuisances are actually big improvements to things that we had problems with Windows 7 before. So the example that I typically use when I'm describing it to someone is, right now, if you're in Windows 7 and you want, say you have an app that's misbehaving, or an application, whatever you want to call it, you would typically right click on the taskbar. You would go to the task manager, you'd click on processes, you'd alphabetize the process, you would find the process, and then you would end it. That's it's not much work because you do it all the time.
Sure.
You don't think about
right.
it. Yeah, the way it works in Windows 8 is pretty simple. You move your mouse cursor to the top center of the screen. You drag the mouse about 2/3 of the way down to the screen. You'll see the window become small, and then if you hold it there for, I think, 2 or 3 seconds, it'll flip. When you drag it back up, you've accomplished all of that in one gesture.
Okay.
So it'll restart. It'll terminate and restart the app. So you don't have to go through all that task manager stuff. It's something that everybody does on a reasonably frequent basis, especially techs. And this simplifies it substantially.
You know, I remember you showing me originally how to basically close an app by dragging it down. But I didn't understand the whole restart of, as you drag that app down and it flips. You know, I was using it to get rid of that app. But so when you drag it back up towards the top, that basically just restarts the whole app.
Exactly. So the flip means that, okay, it's been terminated. If you drag it all the way to the bottom, it will, if you want to get into like the sort of technical nuts and bolts, it'll actually suspend. It won't actually terminate. But if you drag it if you drag it down, it gets small and then it flips, and then you drag it back up, it will terminate and restart the app for you completely.
That's genius. Okay. I didn't realize that that was a part of Windows 8. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. Instead of, yeah, because you're dealing with the app itself. You're not dealing with going down into a menu, trying to find out, you know, control, alt, delete, whatever, task manager, that type of thing to stop the process, like you said. And I'm too lazy to even put it in order. So I just go scroll through there and, and take all kinds of time looking. What's the name of that app again? I have no idea.
Right. And then the executable is not named the same thing as the app. Right. And then you got to digging around trying to figure out where the thing is. It's
what is process 32 DLL? I have no idea.
Right. Yeah, like all of these things take time, and this simplifies it. So, and then if you can teach your customers how to do that, it's much easier to describe that to them than telling them you have to right click, open task manager, go to pro. Like they're not going to remember it, not in a million years.
Oh my, yeah, you know, I tell my parents all the time, and what's a right click, you know? And I think somebody said a story one time. You know, they were dealing with a customer, and I think it was an older customer, and they said. They were telling them to double click on the icon. And anyway, the technician eventually had to come out to the residence because the poor lady was double clicking both mouse buttons at the same time.
And you know what? I didn't even think about it. I'd have to double check this by tinkering. I don't think double click has a meaning in Windows 8. I think everything's a single click, but I'm not 100% sure of that. And again, I'm talking on the modern side, not on the desktop. Still, double click matters. But I think I'm pretty sure double click is gone from the modern side.
Yeah, I don't think it's there because that's the one thing that I've always liked about the Windows taskbar in itself of where I keep some of the icons. And that's one of the things that I really like about the modern apps but the Windows Start menu is that it's a single click. I'm not sitting there, you know, and we do it so often. We think it's just natural to double click on something, but it's like, it is so inefficient. It's not even funny. I would rather single click, you know, my mouse changed. My double click wasn't fast enough to open that. I need to go adjust that in Windows or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And as technicians, we're dealing with many different people's computers and they have different setups on their computer. So this is definitely a much easier way to use this stuff.
For sure. And I think that's part of where Microsoft really dropped the ball when they released Windows 8. They didn't communicate very well that there's a whole new gesture language associated with the mouse and the keyboard for this new operating system. And it confused the heck out of a lot of people. You know, I was forced to use it for a really long time, so I got used to it. But for people who just sat down and they've got this weird looking thing with a completely different mouse language, you have to sort of wrap your head around it. Right click, for example, has a completely different meaning in a modern app than it does on the desktop.
Okay.
So if you're using a modern app and you right click, it brings up what's called the app bar, which is the new replacement for the drop down menus. There's no such thing as drop down menus in apps anymore. Everything goes into an app bar. And if you right click, typically, not always, but typically anywhere on the screen, that brings up the app bar for that app.
Okay. And so what do you do with the app bar? How does that work?
The app bar is very much like the drop-down menus that you're used to. A lot of it depends on developers behaving well. So the goal of the app bar, the way it's supposed to be done, is that there's two app bars on most apps. Some have one, some have two. Depends on the developer. But the way it's supposed to be done is features are supposed to go along the bottom of the app bar. There are two app bars. There's one on the bottom of the screen, one on the top.
Okay.
The features go on the bottom app bar, and the navigation is supposed to go on the top. Now, a lot of developers haven't wrapped their head around this yet. So sometimes they mix and match, which they shouldn't. But it'll become a standard the same way. When combo boxes were introduced, a standard eventually developed. So if people follow the rules, then it'll be a very consistent behavior.
Okay. So now are we talking when the app is actually open?
Yeah. So again, I'm talking about modern apps, not desktop apps on Windows 8. Modern apps are those full screen apps. They take up either the whole screen or you can split the screen into two or three pieces.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about that. Because one of the things that I'm noticing that I, you know, it just came across as we're talking about menu systems and how this thing works. I'm on my Windows 8 start screen right now with all my shortcuts and stuff. And one of the things that I actually like that I didn't really think about and really have not had a use for, you know, so when you go to do something like uninstall an app, you know, on a phone, we're used to being able to go to that icon, and you can pretty much on a smartphone you can uninstall it fairly quickly. You don't have to go down and look in a file system. But when you're on your Windows Start menu and you right click, you've got some menu options here. One is unpin from start, unpin from taskbar. Okay, and what's nice about that? Here's where I've always gone to take my apps, and if I want to pin them to start, I can pin them to start, which is your main menu. If I want to pin them in the taskbar, this is what I'll do. So, but one of the other nice things is you can actually uninstall it from here. You can hit uninstall, and it will uninstall that program. You got open new window, run as administrator, open file location, or resize. And I really like the resize feature on Windows 8 Start because you can make the icon small enough where you can fit a lot on there. And you don't have to have the, you know, some of them look kind of silly. So I actually, some of my apps are larger because they, to me, they just look better and they're not all squished looking. So it's an aesthetic thing. It's not, you know, it's not a functional thing. It's just it's OCD for me.
Well, there actually is a functional thing to the tile sizes. Again, it's going to require the developers to start behaving properly. But the tiles, when they're larger than I think medium, I'm not sure, or wide, I can't remember. But when they're a certain size, they become live tiles, and you'll see that with things like weather. Your weather tile, if you make it big enough, will show you the forecast without you having to even open the app. And that applies to most apps. So it allows you to get information from the apps without even opening them. And it's all sort of right there.
Now we're talking, okay, so now just so we're clear, so everybody understands, the weather app would be what we would call a modern app.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. When I'm talking about Windows 8 apps, modern apps, Windows Store apps, Metro apps, they're all roughly the same thing.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, I'm looking on like the Windows Store, you know, you can turn live tile off. For instance, let's take this as an example. A lot of people will go to Facebook.com to check their Facebook page. I have a shortcut to the Facebook app, which is a modern app, which I do. I have played around with some of these. And if there's a new notification that comes up in that tile, when I'm looking at it, it will put the new notification up. Or if I've got a message, it'll put a little one down in the corner to let you know that there's something in there. You can click on the tile and open the app up and check on and see what's going on Facebook, which people do all the time.
Right. And if you're like me, like you get your little OCD thing going every now and then, you keep checking websites or checking apps or checking whatever, just because you want to check, and this prevents a little bit of that. You can just look at the tile and not have to open it, and you know what's going on. Now, if you look at some of the leaks that are coming out of Microsoft, whether they're intentional or not, I have no idea. You can see that they're planning to take this live tile thing several steps further, to the point where apps won't even have an open or closed state. They'll just always be running on your desktop, and then you can make them big or make them small. I'm not sure, given the rumors that are coming out for Windows Threshold, I'm not sure if that's ever going to actually, you know, reach the street. But it's very clear that their idea, at least when they came out with Windows 8, was to make that happen.
Okay, so that's something that may or may not happen. Right now, it's a basically a rumor that they're here, because I haven't heard about that. But that was originally supposed to be in Windows 8 when they first came out.
Yeah, well, not in Windows 8. I think it was intended for Threshold. It might still be. I don't have any inside information on it.
Okay.
But I will. They're called interactive tiles. And if you go to YouTube and type in interactive tiles, you'll be able to see a video from Microsoft Research showing what the future of the start screen was supposed to be. Now, again, I don't know that that's going to ever. I don't know if it's going to reach fruition, but it's very clear that that was their idea when they came up with this stuff.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah. So interactive tiles on YouTube. I will put that in the show notes. So, and I will look that up.
But yeah, no, it's a very cool, it basically it turns all of your tiles on your home screen into, I guess, widgets. So rather than opening the calculator app, you can actually just do your calculations on the home screen. And then you see your emails coming up in the live tile of the email app. You click on it, it becomes either full screen or half screen. You respond to the email and you don't close the app. You just go back to the home screen and continue on your way. So you're not constantly opening and closing apps. The concept of open and closed is pretty much gone. Apps don't start and stop. They're just running.
Gotcha. Well, and that makes a lot of sense. And I'm just thinking about, you know, some of the live tile apps that I do have running, whether it be mail, Facebook, Twitter, different things like that. When there are notifications that come up and I'm in my desktop doing something else, I get a notification at the top right corner of my screen. And it kind of, it gives me enough information to know whether I even want to go and deal with that right now. You know, if Corey emails me, I just figure out, you know, whether I want to email them back at that point or, you know, wait till later. But it's nice to have that type of flexibility, because if you think about how our phones are, you know, we want these instant notifications all the time. And in the past, we've had to download different apps to be able to do that on the desktop. And I don't think with everything being, I like the systems that are kind of a little more enclosed. And if you can do everything from one system, that seems to me to make it a little easier and not have to get a bunch of third-party systems that, you know, that may or may not work, or they bog your system down or whatever. Not saying that none of the modern apps will, you know, bog your system down or anything like that, but I think they're becoming a lot more efficient because they're using this on the phone side, they're using this on a tablet side, they're using it on a desktop side. And I would think of all the three, you're going to have the most robust power on the, you know, on the desktop side or the PC side, and more than you are with a tablet or a, a phone.
And that actually is one of, it's one of the best things I think about the modern apps, is that they can't use resources the way a desktop app can. So, for example, and I can tell you this from a developer's perspective, if I want to use all your resources on your computer and you put my app in the background, I have 2 seconds to suspend it. That's it. The operating system will suspend my app within 2 seconds if you're not looking at it. And that means that I can't be a jerk. I can't use all your resources.
Okay.
And your computer will run smoother because of it.
That makes perfect sense to me. Now, you know, like you said, that's only with the modern apps. Obviously, your desktop apps are still old school, the way that they've always ran for the last umpteen many years. That's good, because I think if we start to embrace some of the more modern apps and we're able to use them, you know, I'm still guilty. You know, how many people have a tab in their, in Internet Explorer or Google Chrome or whatever, when they pop it open, you know, that goes to Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And that's kind of where they check their stuff on a regular basis. But I'm embracing more and more the idea of having stuff running in the background that's just going to notify me when I need to, look at something, or I might have some interest to look at something. I can definitely see the benefits there. And that's great. So, you know, basically Windows is forcing developers to play nice.
Absolutely. And in a lot of different ways. So, we talked about the start menu hierarchy. We can't put things in weird places. We talked about the suspending of the app when it goes into the background. We can't use resources when we're in the background. And the same applies to the file system. So I'm sure it's happened to every tech out there, where you take a backup of your customer's computer and for whatever reason, they saved the most important picture of their son or daughter in C:\Windows or some weird place. With a modern app, you can't do that. An app does not have access to anything that is outside of what we would traditionally call a library in Windows 7. you can't, and it has its own hierarchy within that. So we can't save things in like neither can users. Nobody in a modern app can save things in a crazy place that they'll never find it again.
Okay. And, you know, and that's one of the things as a technician, that's one of the things I'm very careful with is I look through everywhere just to kind of, you know, give a quick glance. I usually ask my customer, but I have to look through all those spots to see where they might have saved something or why they have 14 copies of the same thing that, you know, I need to back up and move to their new computer. So no, that's good. Yeah. If it has to be in a central location and can't be put in these weird places, that helps us out to know where things are at as a technician.
Yeah, I know on my own computer, just to prevent me from doing exactly that, I created a library called junk where I save all my junk. But it makes a big difference when you're trying to get your customer from one computer to the next. And there's actually some OneDrive or SkyDrive, whatever you want to call it, integration that helps with that as well. So you can like take your configs with you and they automatically go onto SkyDrive. So if you go to another computer, the tech doesn't have to pull all of that information. It'll just come with them.
Okay. You know, in some of the people that have been using, some of my customers that have been using Windows 8 for a while, what they're starting to do is they're actually starting to use things like, is it called OneDrive or SkyDrive now? I can't remember.
It's OneDrive.
Okay, so they're starting to use it. I think it was SkyDrive back then, but they're using OneDrive. Mm-hmm. And basically, that's where they keep all their you know, Word documents, whatever they create, that's what it goes into. So when I was building a customer's computer for them, and basically put Windows 8 on there, and he goes to log into the system, all his stuff's there, email, boom, all his documents, everything. I didn't have to back anything up off the old computer.
Exactly.
It was beautiful. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I don't know why everybody doesn't do this. I'm like, I don't know.
It takes getting used to. It took me a while too. And I should say, I mean, I obviously I've got a horse in this race. I made this app, but I also have a Win32 app. So it's not like I'm saying this because I don't have I can play in both. I can play both games. The Windows 8 app or the modern app, whatever you want to call it, and our regular desktop app, they both work and they both work equally well. I just think that these types of benefits really make a difference. Especially to end users. I think techs, they still have a very strong need for the desktop. But if you get your end users using the modern stuff and away from the desktop, I think that it will make their lives much, much easier. I think techs, they still need the desktop without question. The same way we needed the DOS prompt for a really long time. It took me a long time to get away from the DOS prompt. I remember when Windows came out, I was like, I'm not using that silly mouse. I'm not gonna do these things. I like my keyboard and DIR/W, but I never go into the command prompt anymore.
Right, right. Yeah, as a technician, that is something we still do use, and you still got to have those types of things. So, and a lot of that stuff, a lot of that backdoor stuff, so to speak, I don't think is going to go anywhere. You know, but I think as far from a consumer standpoint of how people interact with their machines, I think it's going to be drastically different as we keep moving forward. You know, even my parents have, you know, they both have laptops, and I got them on a smartphone. I think it was only 2 years ago, and that's where they spend all their time. Man, it cracks me up to no end because you have them sitting there watching Netflix on a little four and a half inch phone, you know, with their Bluetooth earbuds in or whatever. And it's like, and the laptop sits over there just collecting dust. And, you know, so they're getting used to how those types of things work. They almost get irritated when they have to go back to the old hierarchical or whatever, the old system of, you know, the Windows desktop and trying to find things. And where's that? And I can't remember how I got there. And I don't do this all the time. And it's very frustrating. But they can pick up a phone and just touch things and do things that they need to do. And it's not a problem. So that's kind of where I see these systems. I think a lot of people were misled, and rightfully so, that Windows 8 was designed as a tablet only or a touch only. And I said the same thing, but I'm understanding that there are certain things that you can do. And again, it's Microsoft's fault for not putting the right amount of information out there to help people to learn this stuff. But from our standpoint, I mean, as a technician, I think, and I'm not saying all, I was guilty of it. I didn't really deal with Windows 8 unless I really had to deal with Windows 8. And now I'm coming to a point where I go, you know what? I am going, because that's pretty much all you're going to get out there unless you order online somewhere and get some of these older systems with Windows 7 on them, even if they're new systems. You know, if I send somebody to a Best Buy or something like that, they're going to get a Windows 8 machine. That's all there is. So, and that's where a lot of people are buying their stuff anyways. So we're going to have to deal with this problem. And I'm basically going to learn my system so that I can support it. And I think that's what the important thing is technicians. And I used to do that with every other operating system. All of a sudden, Windows 8, I did put it on my machine right away, but I just used it. I used it as, it was a Windows 8 where I had some cheap menus to make it like Windows 7. And I didn't understand all the power that was underneath the hood to be able to use it properly.
I think that's actually, at this stage of the game, a very reasonable thing. I mean, especially when it first came out. The apps, the two biggest things, in my opinion, that are really causing problems for this operating system are, one, as you touched on already, I think Microsoft did a horrible job communicating what was going on here, and it confused the heck out of a lot of people, myself included. They advertised a keyboard that clips onto a tablet, so everyone associates it with a tablet, and people use Windows on their desktop. Then the second thing is, I don't think that the apps, and this is just a time thing, but I don't think the apps are up to snuff in a lot of cases. I find myself, and I'm a Windows 8 fan, I find myself using desktop apps because the modern app equivalent just isn't as good. I still use PuTTY to SSH, for example. I just find it better and more convenient. I would love a really good SSH client for modern Windows. It just doesn't exist as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
So I think when the apps come along, you'll see better adoption. I also think some of the stuff that they're doing in Threshold is going to bring more people across, because it'll be an easier transition, and give people a lot of what they're asking for, rightly or wrongly. That's what the market demands. People want to run things in a window on the desktop because that's what they're used to. And that's coming in Windows Threshold.
Very cool. Let's talk about something that it is very elusive to a lot of people, and that would be the Charms Bar. I know the way you explain it to me, and it reacts a little bit differently between the desktop apps and the modern apps. And so can you kind of walk us through what are some of those differences, and how can the Charms Bar help us to understand Windows 8 a little bit better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to note, actually, I don't know if you've heard this or not. Rumor has it that the Charms Bar is going away in Windows 9. Now, that doesn't mean I think it's a bad idea. I actually think the Charms Bar is a good idea. And so I'll explain the difference between the two. I don't know what's going to replace it. I don't think they're going to abandon the concept of a universal bar. But for those who don't know, the Charms Bar, if you move your mouse to the top right-hand corner, you'll see a bar that comes up with settings and start and share, which is probably the most underutilized feature in Windows 8, period.
I've never clicked on it. If I click on it right now, what does it do?
It's supposed to do a bunch of things. So each app has its own independent what's called a contract. The way a modern app works is it's sandboxed, but share allows it to send stuff in a universal way to another app that can consume it.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like drag and drop.
Okay.
Yeah. In order to really explain the advantage of the Charms Bar, you'd have to have two apps open to really get it. But I'll describe. So something that every single app on Earth has, whether it's a browser or an application or probably a game, is settings. And so rather than duplicating that in every single app, Microsoft's like, you know what? Every app has settings. We're going to put it in a universal place. If you move your mouse to the top right-hand corner or swipe in if you're using touch, there will be a settings charm. And that will apply to the app that you're currently looking at. That's That's what the Charms Bar does. Now, it has idiosyncrasies and things. Again, Microsoft didn't communicate this to people. So if you have two apps side by side, let's say I've got weather and mail, both on my screen at the same time.
Okay.
If I move my mouse to the top right, the Charms Bar comes up and I click settings, which app is it going to affect? A lot of people don't know the answer to that.
Right.
So if you look at the dividing bar between the two apps, you'll notice that there's a small vertical line. That line is pointing to the app that the Charms Bar is going to affect. So if I click settings and the line, let's say I've got weather on the left and mail on the right, if that bar is on the right and I go to the settings charm, it's going to bring up the I just lost track of what's on the left and right. It'll bring up the settings for the app that's on the right.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm playing around with this right now, and I'm looking at it. So if I pull Twitter up you know what? If you really think about this, let me pull another app up. If you really think about this, this is almost like it's very Windows similar. And the reason I say that is, you have to look at if you have several windows open on your PC. When you click on one, it kind of highlights that one by changing the border color of that particular window. And so that you know what window you're actually in. This is doing the same type of thing, except that it's got a little, I don't even know what they call it. What's the little three dots called in today's modern language?
You know, I don't know. But I'd call it a divider probably.
Okay. So when you click on that, and I have a really big screen, because so I could put like five apps up here. but normally, if you have two apps, you know, right and left side. So if you change if you click on basically whatever app, those three dots are going to change to the one that you have the menu settings and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Okay. So let me pull
it. Exactly. So the Charms Bar is it's basically a universal thing that applies to all apps. And then if you click on one app, it moves that little dividing line. Then the Charms Bar applies to that app. If you click on the other app, same thing.
Okay. So basically, yeah. So it changes what you have control. Okay. So all right. So in the Charms Bar, what other features do we have that we can take advantage of?
You know, the truth is most of them are very heavily underutilized. The main one that you would probably use is settings. If the app has sharing capabilities, which is pretty unusual right now, then yes, you can probably share with your Twitter or Facebook, because they do have contracts most of the time. So for example, if you had let's say you had photos in one pane and Twitter in the other. And I'll be honest, I've never tried this, but you can probably share your photo with Twitter and it'll post it for you.
Well, I'm looking at, so even when I was on a desktop, what was kind of cool is when I hit the share button on the Charms Bar, what it would bring up is it brought up the share, and it had under the menu, it had desktop, because that's where I was at. And it mm-hmm. said, do you want to send a screenshot to Facebook, email, or Twitter? And I'm like, wow, you know, I don't know how many times, how many times do we use the snipping tool or take a screenshot, and then we got to take that screenshot, we save it to the desktop, and then we send it to a company XYZ to look at it because, you know, there's something wrong. And because I just had this happen today where I had to send somebody a screenshot, and I'm understanding this is so simple. I go to share, here's my desktop, or here's my, you know, window, you know, whatever it is, Internet Explorer. Oh, I'm going to share the email. Oh, click on email. Here you go. Hey, you type an email address. There you go, dude. That's what it looks like. And
exactly.
that makes a lot of sense. So one of the things, and let me go back to when you have the dual screens on Windows 8. Okay, so you have this bar in the middle, just so I can kind of describe this for people. And that's why I'm kind of using it while we're talking and hopefully not messing up the recording. But anyways, that's why I use an external recorder. Anyways, so you've got this black line in the middle with three dots towards the center. And basically there is a white line on one side or the other of the three dots. So when you click on a window pane, they probably should make this a little more prominent, and hopefully maybe in the newer operating system they will. But when you click on the window pane, the little white line will go to whatever app, whatever side that app is that you can control the settings from the Charm Bar. And that's, so that's basically the, basically for all intended purposes, that's the window that you're operating in, no different than Windows on your desktop that would change the border. This is just a little, it's not as prominent, but really the slight change from gray to light gray, it wasn't that prominent anyways. There was a lot of times where I had to look at a window and figure out, and I start typing and I'm in the wrong window anyway. So I had to go back. So same type of thing on this, guys. So, all right. So I'm sorry. So where were we at? So Charms Bar, settings.
Yeah. And settings actually, is a really good example, because that's again, somewhere that programmers tend to mess around. So for example, in my own app, in my Win32 app, I don't actually have a screenshot in front of me, but let's say you're looking at the Instant House Call Win32 app. I think it's File Connection Tools Help is what you have in the traditional drop-down menu bar. If I asked you, where is settings, it could be in probably 3 out of 4 of those places. It could be under Edit Preferences. We've all seen settings in under Edit Preferences. It could be under File Setup, and it could be under Tool Settings. Now, in Instant House Call, it does show up under Tool Settings. But programmers can put it anywhere. With Windows 8, they can't do that. It all belongs in the settings charm. It's never going to be somewhere else. Your customer will always, always know that if they want to change settings for their app, they go to the settings charm.
Okay. So, all right. So help me through this. So I've got two apps open. I've, you know, Facebook and Twitter, just, you know, because these are the modern apps that I do actually have loaded up. So when I want to get into the charms menu, because what's happening is, you know, I think things have changed a little bit in 8.1. When I go to the top, it gives me a drop down menu where it has the minimize and the X out of the program, kind of like your old traditional Windows. Right. So how do I get to the, okay. So I just did it by accident. I couldn't actually go to the corner because it drops down. And I'm trying to figure out where to, that's kind of weird. Okay, so I actually went from the corner and drug down, and then my charms bar would come open.
Right.
Okay.
And, yeah, and I think I mentioned to you before the show, I'm not a big fan of that new little black bar that appears there, but obviously they put it there because there was a strong demand for it. But yeah, in order to get to the corners, now you have to go right to the corner and drag down a little bit to get past that past that black bar.
Okay, so that has changed. That's what I was kind of curious about. I'm like, well, why is this not working? So I just learned something new while we're sharing this podcast with you. So go to the right corner. And when you're in a modern app and you're going to drag down a little bit and the charms bar comes open every time. Again, not very intuitive, but once you start to learn these little tweaks, they can make your life a lot easier, because there's a lot of things that you can do. You know, you've got an options menu under settings and in privacy policy, terms of service, legal permissions, you know, rate and review, privacy policy. And then down at the bottom, this is the only thing I had ever used the charms bar for, was power to turn my machine off, which I thought was ludicrous, to be honest with you. I do like that they put it in the corner of the start menu now. I do like that change, because it's easier to get to. And maybe I was doing something wrong or a little bit different. You've got notifications down here. You've got your keyboard if you want to use the, you know, I think it's just what type of keyboard it is. Yeah, that makes no sense. You've got your volume, you know, your network that you're on, and then obviously brightness, because I'm on a, you know, PC or a desktop, this brightness does mean nothing. But on a laptop, I would imagine that you could change the brightness on your screen, whether you're on battery or not. So, or whether you're in a dark room, I guess. I guess that would be more for maybe a tablet of sorts.
Right, right.
So again, the only thing I ever really used down here was, well, actually two things, was the network icon to get to my network settings or make a wireless connection, mostly on laptops, and the power setting, which I could bring up, and of course I'm not going to do it now or I will lose Corey, sleep, shut down, restart. And the one thing that I do, if you ever have Windows updates that have already loaded in the background, your machine, what it'll do is it'll tell you that it's gonna restart within 1 day or 2 days or whatever. I don't know how they exactly figure that out if you don't restart your machine before then. So when you go to the power button and you go to restart, it'll stay restart to install and install your updates.
Right.
And so, you know, when you go to do that restart, it's going to take you a little bit longer because it's going to go through the updates. So depending on what you're doing, that could save you some time of being able to, maybe not restarting it at that point.
And the other thing that you'll notice down there is there's a like a modern control panel that's not nearly as powerful as the one you find on the desktop. But do you see the little control panel down there?
The little control panel.
Should be a hyperlink that says control panel.
Well, I'm
going to change PC settings, I think.
Oh, change. Yes. Okay. Here it is. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So that's like the control panel that your customer ought to be using. You should be using the one, obviously, on the desktop. But it's like control panel light. I'm sure in time it'll become more powerful, but it has all the stuff that your customer should be using and probably can't cause much damage with.
Right. Yeah. Because this brings you to the PC settings. You got PC and devices, accounts, OneDrive, search and apps, privacy, network, time and language, ease of access, and update and recovery. And of course, you got my beautiful picture here and a picture of a awesome Mustang and some sort of beautiful flower field for picture password, which I do not use. So yeah, and I've clicked around in here and just, kind of figuring out how things work. And I'm still not, I didn't realize this. So as I'm looking on my lock screen, which you have when you first start your computer up, actually it gives me a lot of different pictures that I've used on desktop and stuff like that. And I can actually change my lock screen to whatever I want, which I did, but it's been the same one since I've been running Windows 8. And then I just noticed that there are also, which I don't have on, lock screen apps.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually put apps on your lock screen, even on a desktop like this?
So a lock screen app, I think you're allowed a maximum of 8. But basically, they get special permissions within the operating system that allow them to continue to use resources even when they're not running. So for example, Instant House Call needs notifications if a customer is trying to connect to you. It'll then bring up a notification even if your computer is locked. So Instant House Call is a lock screen app or a background app. And there's a limited number of slots for those. And I think it's actually the same with most phones as well, if I'm not mistaken, but I actually don't know.
Yeah. Each and every phone and their manufacturers are different on what they allow, or, obviously you can root your phone and do some, changes there, of which I've never been able to get to work very smoothly, but, cause usually whoever's building the operating system, however their lock screen works is usually, in my opinion, the best way to use that. So, but that's very interesting that there's, and so I would say if you're going to go into the PC settings, you just kind of dig down through the menus and see the different things. A lot of things that we go into is text, and I haven't even realized this as much. Displays, when you're using two displays, you can do setting changes from here. And obviously, it's display. You've got devices, which you can go into, and it'll have all your different types of devices. I've got my television, printing a PDF, different things like that, keyboards and, USB hubs and different things that you can, get to very quickly. Mouse and touchpad. You've got typing, which autocorrect on misspelled words. I'm not a big fan of autocorrect, but anyways, highlight misspelled words that I am a big fan of because I do it all the time. you've got, and there's different things in here that you guys can play around with, corners and edges, how you do app switching and different things like that. There really is there's a lot of stuff that I have not really looked at in here that I'm just looking at now. And having an understanding that there's a lot I can do from this one central app versus going to the control panel like I normally do.
Right. And I think the delineating point is that control panel is for your customer and the control panel on the desktop is really for you. And if they stay in there, they're not going to break stuff. If they go into the one on the desktop, there's a lot more damage they can do.
And I don't know if people do this when they're backing up PCs, but here's one of the things I do. I always check when I'm doing a backup to see how much space I'm going to need, or where they're keeping certain things. And I just noticed if you go under the PC settings under disk space, it shows you how much free space you have on the hard drive you're on. It shows, apps that are, you know, see my app sizes. Mine's 593 megabytes, and it shows media and files. So I've got 35.5 gigs of pictures. I've got 71.4 gigs of video. Wow. I didn't even realize that. I've got 26.6 gigs of music. I've got 159 gigs of documents. Yeah, I'm a hoarder. And I've got 1.10 gigabytes of in my downloads folder. And then it shows in my recycle bin, I have 649 megs. So this is a good area to get a quick amount of information. And it actually splits it out better than even the Windows desktop app would.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think they're looking at things that people often do and recognizing that we need to know where our disk space is going and where we need to clean up. And it's very clear that you can, if you want to get a whole bunch of space, you can look at that little report very quickly and get rid of whatever you don't need.
Absolutely. Okay. So, did we cover everything inside the Charms bar, or was there, we've got the share feature. I think one of the things that's, let's go through this, you know, to make sure we didn't miss anything. So we've got the search menu that you can click on and obviously type in a search in the Charms bar. You've got the share menu, which you can share to, you know, email, Facebook, Twitter, whatever else they allow in there. You've got the start menu, which I don't really understand why they even put that in there, but whatever. Cause I use my keyboard so much just to click on the start menu and just bring it, pop it up and pop it back down when I'm done. Devices. What does devices do?
Yeah. I want to rewind for a second to the start menu. Because there is a very distinct purpose for that. And that is so that every device, whether it's a tablet or a desktop or whatever, will always have a start menu on it. So I don't know that they exist, but I suspect that the plan for that start menu was to have super low end devices that didn't have a capacitive touch key for the Windows key, so that you could swipe in on a small tablet and press the start menu.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so I can see that. Yeah, I can see the benefit there.
So it's just to provide a very universal feel for every Windows device is always going to have a start menu there, even if it doesn't have a keyboard attached to it or whatever.
Okay, very good. Okay, so and then we were down to, so we've got, okay, so I think we were at devices. And basically under my devices, you know, in the Facebook app, I have play, print, or project. What do these really do for you? Or do you know some other apps that are actually more beneficial? Or what is it talking about when it's saying devices?
So devices can be anything that's connected to your computer,
okay,
obviously. So for example, if an app knows how to print, it'll show print there. If an app knows how to project and you have a projector, it'll project it. And some apps are going to have special features for projectors, special features for different types of devices. So, you know, if I'm doing a presentation, I want my notes to appear on my PC, but I want, it's a PowerPoint, I want to look at my notes on my PC, but I want to project it so everyone else can see it. The PowerPoint app, not that it exists yet, but eventually I'm sure it will.
Right.
The PowerPoint app would be able to project the presentation, but let me take a look at the notes.
Okay, very good. You know, there was something else that I just want to mention that I just noticed too, because I've always, for some reason, and it might be my particular setup, maybe not, but when I go to the right-hand corner, sometimes I have to basically go to the right-hand corner on Windows 8 and drag down a little bit. Not every time, but sometimes it won't launch right away. So if I just move it slightly down, the Charms bar always comes up.
Right. And the same applies actually to the top left corner, which is where you switch between apps.
Correct.
So if you move your mouse to the top left corner, you'll see like little windows sort of representing themselves.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
Yep.
And then if you drag down, they'll become bolder so you can see them better and very quickly and easily switch between apps.
And it's very cool because as I've been playing around with this, so on one of my screens, I have the modern app Facebook, and I have PC settings on the right in that in a split screen. And right below that, I have a full screen Twitter app open. So, and I've done it before where I've had several apps open in here. You could have the desktop back in here, no problem. And you could switch between these apps very quickly, which makes it nice.
And a really good for those folks who like keyboard shortcuts, WinTab is similar to AltTab, but it cycles between modern apps.
Ah, very cool. Okay, I just learned something new. WinTab.
And the other thing you can do is move your mouse to the top right-hand corner, and you can drag an app to the side of the screen that you want it to appear at.
Right, yep. Yeah, that's one of the things I did, you know, in moving apps around. And I think on this screen, I think I can get up to three apps side by side.
Yeah, it depends on the screen resolution. So, for example, I have a Surface. I can only get two, but on my desktop, I can get three.
Okay, gotcha.
And one other tip for switching between apps, if you move your mouse to the very top left corner and you start seeing that outline, just click and it'll toggle between apps. It's similar to the Alt-Tab that you're used to. Alt-Tab and release, I guess.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, it's going through each and every app, no problem. And it's pulling it up for me, and it, you know, brings me back to my desktop. So I could sit here if I had a bunch of you know, modern apps open, and I didn't even realize I could do this, and I might actually start to play around with this a little more if I have my Facebook app in there or my my Twitter app and stuff like that, because I'm terrible at checking Twitter. But I could basically put my mouse in the left-hand corner and just click and go through and see if there's anything new, and then when I come back in, it brings me right back to my desktop with whatever I was doing.
Exactly. And if you want to see the thumbnails, you'd move to the top left and then move your mouse down across them, and you'll be able to see the thumbnails and click on the one you want.
Right. Yep. And that's what I've done here. Very nice. Okay. Well, I like that. I like that feature. Not something I'm using, but as I'm learning how to utilize this better, I mean, how many people do you know that download a weather app? You know, in every time, because whether it be Weatherbug or whatever, not to call any companies out, but I will, Weatherbug. A lot of times it will be very harsh on a system. And it's a desktop app that's running and just constantly hogging resources with the advertisements and different things that are running in the background. And in my opinion, though, a lot of times those are resource hogs. A lot of times I have to ask a customer, are you really using this? Or it is downloaded, you know, many different types of weather. Hey, if there's a storm warning, we're going to you know, give you an alert. And it's like all this stuff is hogging resources. So to me, to take a weather app, and I think that's a lot of times why people downloaded widgets. You know, of course, we found out that widgets were very insecure, and you know, people could exploit them fairly easily. So I think this is a great, you know, way to do things that people, I mean, who knows why people like weather? I have no idea, but whatever. maybe something happens when you get older. No, I do look at the weather all the time. I use weather on my phone constantly. So I'm just kidding. So yeah, I can definitely see the benefits of some of this. So going back to in the charms bar, going back to the settings, basically whatever you have open, whether it be the desktop, whether it be a modern app. Now, when you're using a desktop app, does a charms menu have does it do the same things that it does in a modern app?
No, it doesn't. So for all intents and purposes, the desktop in Windows 8 or modern Windows, whatever you want to call it, is an app. The desktop itself is an app. So if you're in the desktop and you go to the settings charm, it's going to do settings for the desktop, not for the app that's running within the desktop.
Gotcha. So basically your charms bar everything is still the same as far as desktop applications. The only difference is your modern apps. You can go into your settings and you've got, of course, you know, I'm looking at this though. Of course, your desktop, here's something else I didn't know. So I'm in my desktop. I go to the charms bar. Guess what comes up? The very first thing is desktop, obviously, because that's where I'm at. So that's showing what it is. Right below that is control panel. And then you've got your personalization, PC info, and help. An easy way to get to control panel if you know what you're looking at. And so I'm gonna actually start using that, because that's very very intuitive, and it's something that we go to from the desktop all the time, especially when we're working on a computer.
For sure. And have you tried on the desktop right clicking the Windows button?
Right clicking the Windows button. No, I have not. Oh. Programs and features, power options, event viewer, system, device manager, network connections, disk management, computer management, command prompt to admin, task manager, control panel. I'm such an idiot. File Explorer, search, and run.
It's basically everything a technician needs.
That's, you know what? And guess what this, okay, so this, here's how smart, whether you guys agree with it or not, here's how smart I think Microsoft is. I'm looking at this menu, and guess what? When you're running a server, in the start menu, what's all the things that come up? Most of these things that are right here are what comes up in servers. And it's the stuff that a technician would use. Corey, you've enlightened me today because I did not even know that. So if you right click on the taskbar, it comes up with the normal stuff that we use as technicians. We use all the time. This is great. And shut down or sign out. So I don't even have to go to my Windows Start menu. Oh my gosh. Okay. My eyes are opened even more. So I am converted. I, you know what? I will tell everybody I am drinking the Kool-Aid. Okay. We're getting a little long in the show, but that's fine. What are some of the other things that you think that we might need to touch on that we haven't touched on as of yet?
Okay, well, I'll go through a few things that are really, really quick. One of them is closing apps that aren't in the foreground. So if you go back to your modern side, move your mouse to the top left-hand corner, you'll see your list of apps or those outlines of apps appear.
Yes.
If there's an app that's not in the foreground that you want to get rid of, just move your mouse down to it and drag it to the center and to the bottom of your screen and then release the mouse.
That's it.
Yeah, and it's closed.
That's it. Drag and drop it.
Right. So you just drag the app straight to the bottom of the screen, and it's gone. It's out of that list. The other thing that I think technicians are going to really appreciate, again, the biggest challenge is that modern apps there's a lot of them that are just missing. But once you've got your customers using modern apps, the biggest thing, in my opinion, is security. And again, they're making the lives of developers a little bit more difficult by taking away some of the flexibility. It is impossible for a modern app to have a keystroke logger in it. It's just not possible. We're not allowed to access those APIs. We can't scrape the screen. We can't do any of those things that malware does. And this fixes a huge issue in Windows 7 that UAC was, you know, supposed to address, but everyone just clicks yes to it anyway.
Exactly.
So they just said, you know what? Modern apps, you can't do it anymore.
Okay.
So if you can get your customers using modern apps, and again, I recognize that there are a lot of deficiencies with modern apps, but if you can get them using it, they can be assured that they're not going to download that kind of junk.
So would that even include things like the modern app of Internet Explorer?
Internet Explorer is a special case because it does have Flash in it. So I'm not sure. But I don't think you can put toolbars into the modern Internet Explorer. So it definitely has that advantage. But I think Flash does open up a few holes.
Okay.
I would have to check into that.
Okay. But that's good information. Yeah. A lot of people ask me, so let's talk about this real quick too, before you go on. So when you open a lot of people have asked me, so what's the difference between Internet Explorer desktop and Internet Explorer modern app? What do you see that's different between, or how can you tell the difference between the two of them? Because sometimes people get confused.
Mm. So visually, there's a pretty substantial difference.
Okay.
And obviously the gestures that you use. So if you open up your Internet Explorer right now and right click anywhere on the screen, it's going to bring up the app bar instead of what you would traditionally do. Say you're on the desktop, you right click, it'll give you a context menu with copy link, whatever it happens to be. In Internet Explorer modern, it's going to bring up the app bar and all of your tabs as well.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Okay.
Okay. It also, the biggest difference between the two is that IE Modern does not have Java, and the desktop one does. So if you rely on Java, you need to use the desktop one.
Gotcha. And I think that's why a lot of people, but you know, I was just thinking about, you know, because you've addressed an issue that I think plagues a lot of technicians. We've all, you know, and I've had some technicians that have come on a show and talked about things like sandboxy. and in putting their, you know, the Internet Explorer into a sandbox environment. So once you, once you click out of it, you eradicate everything that could have basically infected that. And I think we're getting, if I'm understanding it correctly, we're getting really close with the modern apps to block out a lot of that stuff. And obviously, when websites and all these places start, you know, embracing HTML5 more readily instead of and get rid of Flash, I think a lot of those problems will go away because then we won't have the need for it anymore.
Right. And modern apps by their name, every modern app is sandboxed. Whether you want it to be or not, that's how it is. If you're running a modern app, you know it can't talk to another app without using that share charm.
Okay.
That's the purpose of the share charm, is to make it so the user has to explicitly share data with another app.
Wow. So that's very helpful to the technicians too, for, you know, keeping a system that, and that's why I guess I never understood it. You've explained it to me well now of why Windows 8 is a more robust system. And I don't, you know, as far as, being able to keep a lot of the stuff out. Now I have infected systems, but those people are using desktop apps the same way that they use Windows 7, Windows XP, Vista, all that kind of stuff. But this is actually, if we can get them to start using the modern apps, this is going to keep them safer from the, and I think as a technician, to help people be safer, that's one of our goals, not just to fix their computers, but to get help them with their computing experience.
Yeah, if you can get your customer using modern apps, to the best of my knowledge, it's not possible for them to get infected.
Okay, that's great information to know, because that's not something I would have even thought of, or you know, even had a basic understanding of. Okay, so I'll let you continue on. What were some of the other things you wanted to cover?
I think we've covered a good chunk here. Was there anything else on that list that we opened with that we haven't covered yet?
You want me to remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I can't even remember what I had for dinner. Are you kidding me? No, I think we covered a lot of the stuff. I think that, like you said, the biggest thing that people deal with is the start menu. And I think if we can, if anybody wants, I can take a screenshot of my start menu. And if you want, I will, I will share that with anyone that would like to see it, just to see what I've done, because that's the biggest thing is I had to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And it kind of took me a little while to figure out how to, you know, where I wanted to put things and how I wanted to categorize them to make them work better for me. And each individual person is going to be different. But I think, you know what, if you're not using your start menu anyways, just play around with it and see what you can do and see where you can, you know, put your apps in your different icons to get to those apps in that start menu. And that way, you're not cluttering up your desktop. You're not cluttering up your taskbar, because literally in Windows 7, I had so many things in my taskbar, things that I use all the time, that it just got very convoluted, where like half my icons would be missing because they were hidden until I slid the bar over. Right. And to me, that's so counterproductive. I want it when I click on something, I want to see pretty much whatever I can see. And that's where I think the Windows 8 start menu is really, really helped. I think that was one of the biggest issues. And I think you've explained the charms bar a lot better. We've explained how to control different apps in what you're looking at. And, you know, with the right click on the charms menu and the left click on, or the left corner of the screen for opening up, you know, different multiple apps that you might have open, and kind of clicking through there. I can't think of anything else right now that I would think.
One thing that I would do if I were a tech would be to put my tile onto the customer's home screen after I left, so that they can get a hold of me very easily. It's a great opportunity to brand yourself and to make it easier for your customers to reach you again.
That's a great idea. So now, when you're saying a tile of your going to your website or something of that respect, or what type of tile are you talking about?
Yeah, I would. I mean, you can do it to your website. There's also, and its name escapes me right now, but I'll send it to you once I remember.
Okay.
There's a very, very easy way to Project Sienna, I think. But there's a very, very easy way to make Windows 8 apps, like very basic ones. And it's very much like using Excel. If you can use Excel, you can program a Windows 8 app with this thing. If you wanted to make like a basic app for your customers to reach you, you could. I'll track that down. I'll send it to you for the show notes.
That'd be great. Yeah, because that is something. Yeah, because if we teach people how to use the modern apps, and I know sometimes we put icons on the desktop and stuff for them to reach us, or you know, if we're using things like Instant House Call and stuff like that, we'll keep those things so that people can get in touch with us quickly. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. If you give something to the, I'll be interested because I will play around with something like that just to see if I can, kind of what I can come up with, even though I have no interest in programming whatsoever, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, no, I've tinkered with it a little bit. I think it's in beta right now. You can find it in the Windows Store, and it's going to put guys like me out of business. It's pretty amazing what you can do with this. It's literally, if you can use Excel, you can make a computer program. It's pretty wild. But I mean, in the meantime, if you wanted to put something of yours on the desktop, you can go to a web page and pin it to start.
Okay. I will definitely try that because I have not. So I could go to my website and basically pin. So how, walk me through this stuff. So how would I do that? So would I have to do that from the modern Internet Explorer apps, or could I use just a regular Internet Explorer?
I think you'd have to do it from the modern one. So open up the modern the modern IE.
You know, the funny thing is, I don't think I have it here. Let me see. Internet. And how do you tell the difference between the two I'm looking for?
The tile will look different.
This must be the modern app because I wouldn't have my desktop app here. Let me open this.
Right click on the screen and does it show the app bar?
Okay, let me go back in there. No, it does not.
Okay, then that's the desktop version.
All right. Internet. Oh, you know what? Okay, I'm guilty, and you know what? I will definitely give this a shot. I think I might have uninstalled that app. Okay, guys, I am drinking a Kool-Aid, but every once in a while I need an iced tea. So I have played around with some of these things and I have not used them to the full advantage. But after learning what I've learned tonight, I'm definitely going to get back into trying to use the modern apps for things I use all the time. I mean, regardless, I'm on Facebook all the time. I would like to keep better tabs on things like Twitter. I think what ended up happening was I had so many things running. Every once in a while I go through and clean my system and I just go, I don't need that. I'm not using it, and I uninstall things, but I'm definitely going to install some of the regular apps and get that stuff going. So,
something that for your customer, do you have a lot of customers who are, kind of, they care about their privacy. It's something that...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So in modern IE, and unfortunately you don't have it installed, so I can't show you, but there is, there are, I don't remember what they're called, but there are protection lists, I think they're called, that allow you to block services like Google from following you around the internet, through their ads or whatever, but still keep the websites completely functional. It acts in two ways. One is an ad blocker, and also in IE, and also it maintains your privacy. So, for example, I use Gmail. I can still log into my Gmail, no problem. But if I'm surfing around the internet, those Google ads can't track me as I go around.
That's a good tip. Very good. Okay, because that, again, I think as we're moving people to these systems, we need to stop looking at all the bad things about the system, and we really need to basically, help our people to understand how to better use the functionality of it. And I think, again, from my personal standpoint as a technician, my job is not only to repair a computer or fix a problem or solve a problem. My job really is to protect the customer to the best of my ability. That's what I feel. I don't know how many, you know, I don't know if every tech out there feels like that, but that's, I want my customer to have a good computing experience. So I'm trying to learn how to give them that better computing experience where maybe they don't, you know, you guys can look at it as putting yourself out of a job, but there will be plenty of things to do. I'm not worried about that, but I want my customers to have that good experience where they can use the computer for what they need to use it for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also speeds things along. Like using modern apps speeds things along. It makes a smoother experience for your customers. They're always going to have questions. You can look at almost every call you ever had, and it's something that's very natural to you, but to them, it's not. This also gives you the opportunity to show them what they can do that's new, and it'll open up a whole bunch of new opportunities, new business opportunities for you that just didn't exist in the past.
Excellent. Well, very good. I think we've covered a lot, and we didn't get a chance to talk about Threshold today, but maybe we can come back at it another time and, you know, basically talk about that. And, some of the things that are coming down the pike is I need to get a little more into what's going on with that. And I'm sure, as a developer and, you know, for instant house call and stuff like that and what you do, you've got to be, you've got to know what's going on so that you can adapt and, make your app, be able to work with that system.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Threshold, the leaks and news are coming out fast and furious right now. So if you're curious what's going on, it's definitely an interesting and a hot topic, and there's lots and lots of stuff that's been coming up. I can't even keep up with all of it.
Right. And it's constantly changing depending on what's true or not.
Exactly. So rumor has it that the developer preview for that is going to be coming out very, very shortly. So we'll obviously have a better idea. But Microsoft's been keeping it under wraps pretty well.
Okay.
Probably better than usual. But we do know a few things. We know that the Charms Bar is going to be gone. We know there's going to be apps running in Windows on the desktop, which I think a lot of people, and when I say apps, I mean modern apps. So you'll have a lot of the benefits. It'll be interesting to see how they implement it, but a lot of the benefits of the modern apps that we covered today, but they'll be running in a window on the desktop, which is just something that people really have made very clear that they want. And there's lots of other stuff coming too. Cortana is going to be making an appearance. Lots and lots coming down the pike. So it should be fun.
Now, let me ask. So when you get a developer preview, are you able to talk about it or do you have to sign an NDA?
I'm not one of the privileged few that gets to sign the NDA and see it before everyone else. So I am able to talk about it.
Gotcha. Okay. So maybe when you get your hands on that and you're using it a little bit and kind of figuring some things out, maybe we can come back and kind of talk about what's going on there. Because I want to prepare myself because this is going to be on modern PCs and it's something that I'm going to have to support in some form or fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to. And I think I think you're going to see something similar to the way 7 came after Vista. I remember Vista was a complete bomb at market because it was a big change. I think Windows 9 is going to, or Threshold or whatever they end up calling it, is going to fix a lot of the issues. And it'll be the same thing where people pile onto it. That tipping point will be much faster than people expect.
It is funny how Microsoft has gone through the every other, which again, I've explained this to a lot of people. I run, I've always built my own machine. So when I was running Vista, I think Vista, I didn't run it for the very first year or maybe 9 months. But when I did load Vista up on my machine, I never had an issue with it. And I think that was at least Service Pack 1. I don't think it was Service Pack 2 yet. I had enough resources in my computer that it wasn't an issue, but I understand that what the OEM manufacturers were putting out at the time was subpar equipment, and somebody didn't communicate right, I can tell you that. And, these people were trying to run Windows Vista with 1 gig of RAM and a Celeron processor, and that just was not going to cut it. Because Vista was a hog, I'm not going to say that it wasn't, but if you have the right equipment, I think the operating system will work. So I think a lot of times we want to put the blame on Windows and or Microsoft, and I don't think it's not always on Microsoft's end. That's just my opinion. Everybody can have their own. So anyways, if I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us today. This has been, I've learned a lot more than even what you explained to me the first time. And I'm definitely going to play around with some of these things, and I encourage everybody else to. If people want to reach you and maybe ask you a question, if you had time or something, what would be the best place to reach you at?
Yeah, they can reach me anytime at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at instanthousecall.com.
Okay. Very cool. I will have that in the show notes. And then if you guys want to find me, you can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And you guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. That helps the network out, and it doesn't change your price at all. It just puts a little change in the pockets of the network to bring you these awesome shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.